Hi. My presentation is a little bit different. I am going to be talking about a public health program that we do with the state of Iowa, the Iowa Department of Human Services and Eyes Open Iowa. It's called Talking Sex Together, TXT, and it's about using mobile technology to generate teen dialogue about pregnancy prevention. And this is a scalable model. It could be really used in any city or state, but as I mentioned, this is something that we specifically do in the state of Iowa. So to give a little bit of background, and Maura mentioned this as well, and we're all aware that after falling for 14 straight years, the national teen birth rate suddenly jumped 3% in 2005. So that was when this program began. And then since then, we've seen a steady decline in teen birth rates, reaching an all-time low in 2010 of 34.3 births per 1,000 women age 15 to 19. But, you know, it's really important to note that there are still nine times as many teen mothers in America as in other developed countries. So it's definitely an issue that we all care about, and that's why we're here and should be paying attention to. And Iowa is approximately 10% lower than the national average teen pregnancy rate, but they really wanted to stay there and continue to see a decline, and were concerned about this sudden jump that they saw in 2005. So the objective of our campaign was to decrease teen pregnancy in Iowa by generating teen dialogue about pregnancy prevention and disseminating medically accurate information about safer sex and abstinence. You know, as you know, studies show that comprehensive sex education can help youth delay the onset of sexual initiation and reduce the frequency of sexual activity, reduce the number of sexual partners, and increase condom and contraceptive use. So we looked at our target population, which were teens ages 13 to 18, and we all know that teens spend a lot of time online and spend a lot of time on their mobile devices, but I'm still amazed at some of these numbers, that 84% of teens own cell phones. They send an average of 3,000 texts per month, and I'm also surprised, this is just kind of a fun stat, that 47% of teens can text with their eyes closed. So it's clearly something that they're using a lot of, we all know that, but it's a channel that they know and trust and that they use a lot. So we conducted six focus groups with Iowa teens when we initially kicked off this campaign, and really it basically just confirmed what we knew about national statistics about mobile and online use. And it provided an opportunity for us to test some of our campaign messages. So it wasn't, research-based. It was more just an opportunity to ask them about the channels that we potentially could use to disseminate this information and test some of our overall campaign ideas. One key insight that we got from these research groups is, you think a lot about teens communicating to others through channels like Facebook and Twitter. But we really found that they're really not comfortable asking specific questions in a classroom setting or in public forums such as Facebook about teen sexuality. The personal topic of pregnancy prevention is best communicated directly via controlled or private channels. So the strategies for this campaign, based on kind of our focus groups and just our initial look at the target population, was to utilize teens' affinity for media to deliver the campaign messages through a private channel like a mobile device, to create a fully integrated program to reach teens on their turf, and create cues to action across multiple channels, and to incentivize teens to drive participation. We all know that teens want to know what's in it for them. So why should they engage with this campaign? So we found that we really do have to incentivize them to keep them coming back to hear our messages. So this is where the creative concept was born, and essentially it's a mobile contest. So we're asking teens to text TXT, Talking Sex Together, TXT is our acronym, to a short code, which our short code just happens to be 877-877, and we do weekly text messages every Friday afternoon as teens head into the weekend to try and keep it top of mind. Teens receive polls, quizzes, thought starters. Here's some examples, things like think 30% of teen girls in the U.S. get pregnant at least once before the age of 20. That's 745,000 teen pregnancies a year, so just thought starters like that to questions about things that are going on that are relevant, like do TV shows like Gossip Girl and 90210 accurately portray teen sexual behavior? We also mirror these polls that we're sending out via text every week. We mirror that content on our Facebook page and our website. So it's all kind of intertwined and integrated. We also provide weekly prizes, and typically we award 1 to 2 a month, again, to incentivize them to come back. And typically we just do a $25 Visa gift card. We can, I don't know if you know this, but you can brand them with your campaign messages. So we typically brand the gift cards and send them out, and we try to do them spontaneously throughout the month so they don't know when they're coming, to keep them coming back. And usually it's for the first person that answers the poll question or gets the poll question right. He mentioned Textina, so we decided that we needed some faces for the campaign, and to save on costs, instead of getting a local spokesperson, we developed these characters, Textina and TextEd, and we did test these with our teen groups and with our grantees, and it was really important that these spokespeople were credible, memorable, relatable, that they had a male and female perspective both, and that they looked to be healthy role models. And the real important thing is that we launched a mobile hotline. So on the first and third Friday of every month from 3 to 5, teens can text in any questions they want and get real answers from Textina or TextEd. And Textina and TextEd are trained sex health educators that are on the other end of the line from Planned Parenthood, and they answer teens' questions live from 3 to 5 two Fridays a month. And what this did is it created two-way dialogue. So a lot of people are using mobile as one-way dialogue to push messages out to teens, but this enabled us to create two-way dialogue with the teens, and oftentimes they'll even go back and forth with our sex health educator and, you know, continue a conversation throughout the chat. We get questions on everything from where can I get free STD testing in my community to is sex healthy? Is it true that all guys just want a girl for sex in high school? So we get a broad range of questions, as I'm sure you can imagine. We really felt like it's important, you know, you can have campaigns and you can have great interventions out there, but it's really important to let teens know about them. So we do a broad, integrated promotional effort. As I mentioned, we have mirrored content on our website and Facebook page. We also do radio PSAs in the state of Iowa. We give away a ton of branded materials. Teens like tchotchkes, so we do everything from locker magnets to t-shirts, to lip balms are really popular, and we also advertise at high school sporting events and do high school newspaper ads as well. And finally, the most important awareness tactic is leveraging our adult advocates. So we work with the State Department of Health, as I mentioned, but with their grantees, with For Eyes Open Iowa, and word of mouth is hugely important for our campaign. So we present at their annual conference every year, and we use them to disseminate our branded materials and all of our messages as well. So here are some results for engagement. We have we've had more than 3,000 teens engage with the program by enrolling, and as you can see, enrollment has increased from over the quarters that we've been doing this campaign. And we've had more than 1,600 questions submitted to our hotline. So our hotline has become increasingly popular as well. So some of our just general awareness results is we've had more than 11 million media impressions. So that's including everything from our high school newspaper ads to our PSAs to just general media outreach. We've been featured in a lot of the local newspapers and TVs for this campaign that we're doing. As I mentioned, we've enrolled 2,000 teen subscribers. It's actually up to closer to 3,000 now, and answered about 1,600 questions. And from a behavior change perspective, we do ask the teens on a regular basis and reconvene our focus groups every year. And we poll them at the end of every year. And we have seen that 89% of teens enrolled in the campaign report that TXT has had a positive impact on their attitudes and behaviors about sex and pregnancy prevention. Why it works, we feel like this meets an unmet need by creating dialogue about sensitive information via a private channel. We've developed trust among our target audience by serving as a reliable and consistent resource. We use the PESO model, which is that integrated approach to marketing and getting the message out. We really try to speak like our targets. We use our Planned Parenthood partners and our trained sex health educators to help us use ensuring that it's medically accurate, but we're not using overly scientific jargon and making it casual and teen-friendly language. And we've continued to evolve the program based on the teens' feedback. So we're constantly integrating, if they post a question on Facebook or during our focus groups, or if we're getting a lot of the same questions, if we're seeing any trends in the questions that we're getting, we try to evolve the campaign to address those needs to ensure that we're meeting the needs of our target population. So this is our website, teenstxt.com, so you can check it out if you'd like. And there's my contact information. We have, like, when they initially send in their first text, they get a reply. They have to consent. They do a consent form via the phone. And then once they engage in the first hotline, they get sort of a response that says, you know, kind of the rules of the hotline, and it does say it's a trained sex health educator that will be answering their questions. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. At the end, it hasn't happened yet. She's awesome, our person. And the way it is she's not, just so you understand too, she's not texting on her phone. We actually have a system where the texts go into a database, and so she's able to type answers, and she can kind of see if conversations are happening. But at the end, she says, you know, if anyone has any additional questions, please go ahead and text them, and then we'll answer them during the next hotline session. And we also say that we'll post Q&A on our Facebook page and our website if anything hasn't been answered. Yeah. Unfortunately, we did not, since it's anonymous, it's hard to get feedback and to be able to trace the people that started at the beginning of the campaign through the end, and we didn't set it up in that way. We wish we would have in hindsight. But we do just do anecdotal feedback. So when I say, you know, 89% said that it impacted their decision choices, we basically, at the beginning of every year, so every school year, we send out a questionnaire, and then we send out that same questionnaire at the end of the school year, and we ask questions about their sexual health choices. But unfortunately, it's not really research-based, because we can't say that it's the same person that answered that way. So I think if we would have done it again, we would have actually pulled out a sample size and that weren't anonymous and actually been able to do some real data on those participants. Yeah, so I should have mentioned that. We're actually doing a ton. We just got awarded another 5-year grant for this project, and part of that grant was to add more direct-to-parents communication. And we ask, if someone opts out, we ask why. So you can opt out at any time. You just have to text STOP to our short code, and you automatically are opted out. And then we just send them a quick, like, 3-question, why did you opt out? And a lot of times it is because, their parents saw their phone and didn't want them texting information. So we've done a lot more educational pieces directed at parents, and on our new website, which is actually launching next week, we have a whole page dedicated to questions for parents. And we're actually doing some, we did flyers that we're handing out to businesses, and through our grantees, they're doing a lot more parental education on this program. You know, we don't get very much of that. We don't know when they're, because they're not calling, they're just texting. So we don't get, you know, background information on the people that are asking the questions. So if a parent asked a question, they could. But we haven't noticed any of that, really. We do get occasionally some funny questions, but our sex health educator is great at kind of deflecting those and giving an appropriate message answer. Yeah, great question. We actually have good equal representation of all zip codes in Iowa, but we do have a breakdown that I'd be happy to share with you of participation. And we have target, the cool thing about if you ever choose to do a mobile campaign is you can track it by area code. So we have a great way of seeing what area codes are participating more than others. And we've actually seen quite a bit of participation from rural areas. And we've done some targeted PSAs in zip codes where we haven't seen as much participation, and we've seen participation increase in those areas. So that's the great thing about mobile, is you can track it via area code.
Great. I want to encourage you to ask questions on any four of the presentations this afternoon. So, I can tell you what, if you can sit down, I can hand you the microphone, and then way you can be relaxed, sort of.
Yeah, that's a great question. There is data on, I think, pubertal hair growth for males and breast development for females. And we initially started at ages, and then we're interested in exploring those as well. So if you can just see gender differences and patterns, that's a really great suggestion. And I think there also may be a question on deepening the voice, too, in addition to
the people. Okay. Laura, actually, I had another question. There seemed to be a step up from non-high school to high school or any of the educational statuses, even for the white group. You want to comment on that? Do you think it's a step function, or do you think it's a, you know, or continuous function?
That's a good question. What I noticed was that college education seemed to be the kind of confer like the greatest advantage. So I think it may be that the stepwise function of having a degree is helpful in terms of acquiring jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Increasing income and things like that. So the education variable is measured categorically,
right?
And so we used it that way. But it's interesting to think about how a degree can translate to something versus like some college, right?
Yeah.
Or post college is a little more ambiguous. So what jumped out to me was the college grad.
The college grads, okay.
Advantage.
Okay. Good. Other questions? Kristen, you wanna relay some of the experience of having your IRB or whatever it was, the community group, switch around the consent method, and didn't cause any gray hair that's obvious, but you want to talk about that?
Well, quite honestly, Kevin Sherwood was the one really who was working very closely with the school district. In fact, it was the school district who approached her in terms of collecting the data about adolescent sexual behavior, relationships with peers and pairs, and so forth related to sexuality because of things that they were experiencing and hearing anecdotally in school. So initially, this wasn't something that I think Catherine necessarily wanted to do. I mean, she really wanted to do it, willing, but it wasn't something that she was going into a community that didn't want this. I mean, the school district wanted her to collect this data and do this, and so it was made it that much more unfortunate what had happened with the restrictions where people had heard about the questions that we were going to be asking to the high school students and had sort of misinterpreted that we'd be asking younger children about oral sex and so forth. And this is, in a rather liberal community, yet still in the Midwest, and so it was unfortunate that people had misunderstood the nature of the study and therefore resulted in us having to re-go through the process of IRB to deal with that. And so I think that the parents would have been more receptive, but it really was a function of just having to go through multiple steps in order to get that consent, which really limited our sample. And so it wasn't, again, the school district didn't want us to be there. They really wanted that data collected, so it just made it all that much more fortunate that we didn't have a larger response to give them more of the answer that they would have liked.
Okay. Oh, we've got lots of hands here, but in the back, and then up here, and then over here. In the back?
Yeah, I was just curious if you looked at comparisons with the risky sexual behavior of a teen and risky sexual behavior of adults. Just like if the study can see if there's actually a big difference, or whether there's some bias against teen sex and risky sexual behavior.
Yeah, that's a great question. And we haven't looked at it in terms of race, but I think that the ways in which people conceptualize adolescent sex is the reason that it is for this particular examination, because I think when you are looking at adults who are not, I think we see that in adult sex, right? So we look at condom use, we might say, well, 50% of young adults, or remember, adults are not using condoms and they're not married or that sort of thing. Yet it might be the case that those folks are looking to get to have a pregnancy, or they're in committed relationships with monogamous partners, or in same-sex relationships where pregnancy is not going to be a concern. And so I think that we do see this sort of idea of risk. Maybe our ideas about risk need to be broadened even at the adult level, because we sort of think about, we think about condom use, for example, that denominator might need to be re-examined. There might be many reasons. This is something I presented at ACHA several years ago, but this idea of why people might engage in condomless sex, adults, not just adolescents, and there are many reasons that would be conceptualized as safe reasons, like I said, being in same-sex partnerships or wanting to have a pregnancy or being each other monogamous. And so I think that this conceptualization could apply to adults as well, but that's something we should certainly look into.
Naya?
Yeah, we did ask a lot of questions that weren't just sort of about parental relationships, peer relationships, other things that were beyond the scope of why are we at.
Okay, up here.
My question back to Mary. I know it's anonymous in terms of the text messages, but I was curious, were you able to break down like patient and harassment? Is that known at all? And then do you guys consider maybe changing your social marketing campaign to reach like Latinos and African American youth because
Yeah, excellent question. We actually have a program that we're thinking about piloting in the urban areas of Iowa, and if we do that, we do want to take data specifically on different racial groups and see if there's any correlation, because I totally agree with you that I think The challenge is that because we didn't collect that data up front, we don't have background information on the people that are participating to get a sense of, you know, what the racial breakdown is, or even the male versus female. We have asked in general, you know, how many males, how many females, and we've gotten responses, but it's not, again, you can't really self-report it, so it's hard to say that that's accurate.
Okay. Go ahead. Yep, you.
Yeah, we have a male that actually participates as well, and they rotate, so they're not always on together, but usually they'll say, like, this is Textina or this is Text Ed. The challenge we have is our female sex health educator is just available more, so she's usually typically the one that's participating, but when it is, we never want to, you know, give the perception that she is a male. So when she is answering, she's saying, this is coming from Textina. And then if he is able to participate, then he says, you know, hi, this is Text Ed, so they know it's a male perspective.
So I had one for Mara. You found some interesting results when, particularly by minority status, particularly when the minority group was either sizable or less sizable. Previous research has shown that if you're a minority living in a majority community or some other configuration, that may influence, you know, your behavior. You want to comment some more on that? That was really interesting.
You're absolutely right. So the issue of potentially social isolation or segregation, if you are in the minority in a particular neighborhood, and the racial majority is something else, that definitely has been shown to have negative implications for your teen pregnancy rates, as well as for these sexual education. And again, trying to figure out how that's happening and looking at the differences by gender, I think it has much more to be understood.
Yeah, I mean, you can actually have some protective effects as well. The minority family that moves out to the suburbs, I think you began to describe some of that, and they actually do better in some cases.
So much of that then ends up also having socioeconomic implications.
Right.
One of the challenges is, again, trying to disentangle who is moving where and why. If you're an immigrant family who is able to get out of the unsafe neighborhood and move into the suburbs, you most likely are. So is it the protective effect of the suburb, or is it the protective effect of that because you're the only minority? Probably not. It's probably much more likely to do with the fact that you're in a safer neighborhood with better opportunities for schools and those additional programs.
Okay.
One of the interesting pieces as well, though, is the concept of immigration status. So communities that are predominantly recent immigrants, you do have a protective effect on sexual initiation, but a negative effect when you're looking at contraceptive use, which one could easily imagine that process.
Yeah. Final, there you go. Final word.
Yeah, we would love to do it 24/7. We just don't have the staff. So right now, it actually started as just one Friday a month, but we got such a high demand that we expanded it to two Fridays a month. So we'd love to have it every Friday, but we just don't have the staff right now to be on the other end. And we really think it's important to be staffed by someone who's a professional in the field, that's professionally trained to answer those questions. So if we're able to find someone else who's willing to answer questions, we would love to expand it because the demand is definitely there. I mean, we get increased participation every single month, so clearly people are wanting more. And we saw an increase when we added that second Friday. So I think ideally we'd love to have it every Friday if we can get the staffing.
Yeah. we got time.
Do you have a lot of backlash from parents who live here? I know you're doing a new website now to address them, but how did you deal with it before you had the website?
Yeah, we didn't really have any backlash necessarily from parents. More just, like I said, when teens would opt out, the number one reason they said was because their parents didn't want them participating. But we did actually have backlash similarly to you from some of the schools. So when we initially launched the program, we really wanted to reach teens through the schools, so through high school newspaper ads and through our in-school social workers and counselors. And we got a lot of pushback for them actually handing out our materials. And so we actually tamed down a lot of the language that we were using. And sadly, if we just put TXT on it and don't put talking sex together, they're more willing to pass out our information. So we have modified the language that we're using and some of the images that we're using. Our first ad was pretty edgy. It had, like, you know, two teens that kind of looked like they were making it, kissing, and they didn't like that ad at all. And so I think with adding texting and text ed, they're a little more, you know, friendly looking and not as edgy. And we've had a lot more luck getting into schools with that messaging.
Wow. So with that comment on kissing, we need to thank our four panelists for a really terrific set of presentations today.